Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Southern Alberta Council of Public Affairs. Today we have an exciting program for you. We're going to have our speaker, Melanie Thomas, and she's going to be speaking on why are young Canadian women disengaging from the political process. Next week, we will be having a speaker who will speak on crystal meth. This drug is probably one of the worst, if not the worst, drugs on the market. We would encourage you to tell your friends, parents of school-aged children and young and teens, and teachers. Let's get a good crowd out here for crystal meth. Okay, in the meantime, Trevor Page, against crystal meth, pardon me. In the meantime, Trevor Page has some exciting announcements about our website.
Trevor. Thank you, Bev, and hello, everyone. I just wanted to tell you that you know we started the website back in September, and for the last 6 weeks or so we've been experimenting with the audio, and we have 5 of the sessions recorded, but we were trying to figure out how we could do this for posterity so that all of the SAGPA sessions are recorded. And we're pleased to announce at this session that Shaw, our partners of 21 years, have agreed to record and post all of our sessions in future to the website, starting with this session today. So we're extremely grateful to Shaw for this. And in order to access the audio, all you have to do is go to the tab on the website which says audio, or go to the particular session, and it's just one click away. So thank you, Shaw, and thank you, SAGPA.
Well, that's wonderful news, Trevor, and so that means that our home audience and those of you who'd like to see today's session again can go to the website and watch our speaker. So it's my pleasure today to introduce to you Melanie Thomas. She's well known to many of you. I see some of her former teachers here today from Emmanuel Christian School. I see her piano teacher here. I see friends from her days in Granham, and many people of various political stripes in the community here to listen to Melanie. Melanie is now a master's student in political science at the University of Calgary, hence her topic today, giving us some of her preliminary results. She has also been an activist throughout her university career, and actually from her very young childhood, she accompanied her mother, who's also an activist, on many political outings. She was the Young Woman of Distinction, the YWCA Young Woman of Distinction, in 2003. So it's my pleasure today to introduce to you Melanie Thomas.
Well, thank you very much for having me, and I appreciate all of you coming out to listen to all of the things that I'm studying and researching on, and I really do appreciate the audience, because as many of you who have done similar research at the graduate level know, some people aren't terribly willing to listen to you, so I'm very excited to actually have this particular forum. So the topic of my discussion today is, why are young Canadian women disengaging from the political process? And like Bev said, I'm an MA candidate at the Department of Political Science at the University of Calgary. I'm currently studying under Dr. Lisa Young, and she's one of the foremost scholars in Canada on women in politics and political parties and elections and those whole sorts of things. So if I could just have the first slide, Bev. So the first thing we need to do is actually define what disengagement is in order for us to actually talk about what it means for a cohort like Canada's young women. Essentially, when one is engaged, when one is engaged, essentially one is interested in politics. They know something about politics, and historically, we've thought that meant that they would be more likely to participate in politics. Now, by interested in politics, what we usually mean is that an individual actually reports that they are interested in politics. So when somebody says, "How interested are you in politics?" they would say, "Oh, yeah, I'm quite interested in politics." When we talk about political knowledge, we're talking about things like knowing who the political party leaders are. In the year 2000, one of the questions we used... My apologies. More? Okay. Is that better? Okay. So when we're talking about political knowledge, again, just to repeat a little bit, we're talking about basic political facts that people should know, things like who the party leaders were during any given federal election. In the year 2000, one of the questions that was asked was if Canadians knew who was Prime Minister when the North American Free Trade Agreement was brought in. In 2004, the question that was used for that in the survey that were used asked what the British Prime Minister, if people could report who the British Prime Minister was. So essentially, basic political facts that somebody who's paying attention to politics might know. So if you are disengaged, that means that you aren't interested in politics. When somebody asks you how interested you are in politics, you would say, not at all, or I don't care. You won't be able to answer these questions about politics, even something as simple as who the party leaders are. And historically, that means that you're less likely to participate in politics as well. Now, why is this a problem? If you are politically engaged, you are more likely to engage with the political system, which means that you're more likely to get responsive and progressive public policy for the interests that you want. You're more likely to tell government what you want. You're more likely to contact your member of parliament, your MLA, your city councillors, and say, I would like you to do this for me. If you are disengaged in the political process, conversely, that means that you're not going to forward your interests, which means that members of parliament or the provincial government or a local government might not know what your interests are, and as a result, they're probably not going to act on them. So why do we care about young women in particular? Well, in 1980, 43% of Canada's young women lived in poverty. These are young women between the ages of 20 and 24. By the year 2000, that number had increased to 57%. The average salary of workers between 20 and 24 fell from $20,313 a year in 1980 to $14,697 in the year 2001. So we know that young people are... earning power has decreased significantly, and as a result, we're living not only below the poverty line, but significantly below the poverty line as well. And finally, the third point on this is that women earn approximately 67% of what men do, and that's including all kinds of work. We know that from Women's Space, with the wonderful research that they do coming out of there, women are more likely to do non-standard work, things like part-time, contract work, things that don't have a lot of stability. When you compare actual full-time work to full-time work, when you actually include women who are doing very similar jobs to men, in Canada, women still only earn about 70% of what men do. When you compare us to the United States and Britain, women earn about 77% of what men do in the United States and about 82% of what men do in the United Kingdom. So Canada's not doing terribly well on this score right here. So some other evidence that we have of specifically political disengagement are lower evidence of participation. And there's a whole list of this. These. They include things like lower voter turnout among young people, a lower level of membership in political parties, and there is a significant gender gap here where young men, even though they are less likely than their fathers and their grandfathers to join a political party, are more likely than their female peers to join a political party as well. We also see a lack of interest in politics and a lack of knowledge in politics. And I have some visual elements that are coming up in the next few slides that really demonstrate just how large these interest and knowledge gaps are. So the first chart that I have looks at voter age, voter turnout by age group in the 2000 federal election. If you look at it, there's a high of, I believe, between 80 and 90% for Canadians who are seniors. So these are seniors who are 65 and older. In political science literature, the 65 and older, and in that kind of generational cohort, is referred to as the greatest generation, or the golden age. And the reason why is that this generation was very civically minded. They were very engaged in politics, they were very engaged in their communities, and they were active on many fronts. You can see just by voter turnout that by the time you get to people who are under 30, we're voting at a rate between 20 and 30%. It's an abysmally low voter turnout rate. And if you look at other political science literature, we're not engaging in our communities as much. We're not engaging in any other facets of the political system as much either. So we know that there's something definitely generational going on. The next slide shows that there's a similar trend going on with political party membership when we break it down by age. Most political party members, again, are from the greatest generation, from that golden era. And when you look at Canadians who are under 30, less than 10% of us are members of political parties. So less than 10% of us are actually involved in any kind of political party where we are actually making policy at the party level. And when you look at the Canadian political party system, it's parties that usually interface with the government. So if you actually want to seek a policy change, a really good place to do that is to actually engage in a political party. And young people just aren't doing that. The next chart shows women's interest in politics over time. And so we're looking at four general elections here. The first election we're looking at, and that's the one that's at the most left, is 1984. And then we look at 1997, 2000, and 2004. So that big jump that you see between 84 and 1997, we think is mostly due to the effect of the survey. We think that's actually a question effect rather than a real significant interest in women's interest in politics. So the really important lines to look at are the last 3 points. And if you look, that blue line is for women who in the year 2000 were between the ages of 18 and 30. So they were born between 1970 and 1982. They were the only cohort where between 1997 and the year 2000, their interest in politics actually decreased. When you compare them to their mothers and their grandmothers, their mothers and their grandmothers' level of political interest either increased or was stable. And so this younger generation of Canadians is the only group of women that's actually disengaging and saying that they are less interested in politics. If you look at the difference between the year 2000 and the year 2004, again, that same 18 to 30-year-old cohort, who is now a little bit older, their level of interest in politics is stable, but it's still significantly lower than any other generation of Canadian women. And you can see that with the other generations of Canadian women. They're about at the same levels as well. And that dot is those who were born between 1983 and 1986. So they're the ones who are, in the year 2004, it was their first time to actually vote in a federal election. And we're seeing that their level of interest is also extraordinarily low when you compare it to their mothers and their grandmothers. Now, when you compare them to their peers, who are between the ages of 18 and 30 they're at about the same level. And so the next chart actually looks at the gender gap in political interest. And so what we do to calculate the gender gap is we take what men report and we subtract from that what women report. And whatever is left over is the gender gap. So if you've got a positive gender gap, that means that men have more of whatever you're measuring than women. There's very few negative gender gaps in Canadian politics. There's very few occasions where you can actually say that women have more of something politically than what men do. But in this case, these are all positive gender gaps, so men have more political interest than women, generally, in Canadian politics. Again, we're looking at 1984 through to 2004. And you can see with most generations of Canadian women, basically those born before 1945, straight through to those born in 1969, there's a bit of a waffle effect. So, and what we know from that is that it's actually men's level of political interest that changes. Depending on the election, men will report about a 5% increase or decrease in their level of political interest. So we know for those generations of Canadian women, their levels of reported interest are stable. They have less interest in politics than their male peers, but it's still relatively stable. Again, if you look at that blue line, that's those born between 1970 and 1982. And there was they were the only generation where between 1997 and 2000, the gender gap actually increased, and it increased significantly. And you can see that. They're moving in a completely different direction than other generations. And if you look between 2000 and 2004, there is a sharp increase in the gender gap for this generation of young women in Canada. Essentially what that means is young men reported more interest, and young women did not. Young women reported the same amount of interest or less. So this generation of women is again behaving in a completely different way than their male peers and their mothers and grandmothers. That dot that's up at the top there is again those women born between 1983 and 1986. And the gender gap between, for this small generation of Canadians is extraordinarily large. It's very big. this is a bit of a preliminary concern because we don't have a lot of people who are responding to surveys from this generational cohort yet because it's still very small. We need more research to be done on young Canadians as they enter into the age of majority, into voting, and those whole sorts of things. But this graph shows that our hope for the future isn't great. So it's not just my generation of young Canadian women. It's also for women who are younger than me. So the next slide shows how something like education doesn't actually make up these gaps. Theoretically, education was seen to be the great equalizer, and historically it's shown itself to be the great equalizer as well. When you educate people to the same level, they tend to be able to perform at the same level. This is one of the main arguments that we have for mandatory education all the way up to the grade 12. It's another argument that students are now using to say that we ought not to pay astronomical tuition fees at the undergraduate level because we need that kind of education to function in the job market in today's society. But these particular graphs show how even when you've got men and women with the same level of education, they don't know the same things about politics. The graph on the left shows, it analyzes the general population. So these are Canadians of all ages. So going all the way from our most senior citizens all the way to people who have just entered the age of majority. The blue bars are men, and they move from low, moderate, and high. So it makes sense that if you have education, you're probably not going to have a low level of political knowledge. You are probably going to know who the political party leaders are. You're probably going to know what party is promising what. You're probably going to be able to place all the political parties somewhat accurately on a left-right political spectrum. Moving all the way up to, we see that most men with education are actually in the high level of political knowledge. We see for women, though, that while most of them, for the general population, are still in the high level of political knowledge, they don't perform nearly as well as what men do. If we look at the graph on the right, this is, again, taken from the 2000 Canada election study. So these are women, these are Canadians between the ages of 18 and 30. Again, that cohort born between 1970 and 1982. The blue bars are, again, young men, and while they don't perform as well as their fathers and their grandfathers in the general population, you can still see the same general trend. When young men are educated, they generally know a lot of things about politics. They're generally placed with a high level of political knowledge. Young women, being the green bars, are behaving in a completely different way. Most of them have a moderate level of political knowledge. Most of them do not have a high level of political knowledge, despite the fact that these are post-secondary students. These are university students. These are college students. These are women with degrees. These are women in graduate school. These are women who are lawyers and doctors. And yet, they still do not report and fall into that category of high political knowledge. When we look at things like whether or not these women are choosing to respond, I don't know, if they're not really sure about the answer instead of taking a guess, that still doesn't make up for this effect that we see. So we know that there's something very different going on with this younger generation of Canadian women. Now, this next chart is the one that I find the most depressing. This is from an American study done by Campbell and Waldbrecht that was presented at the American Political Science Association meeting that was just held a few months ago. Campbell and Waldbrecht study out of the University of Notre Dame. And this chart looks at 14-year-olds. So we're no longer dealing with adults. We're no longer dealing with people who are of the age of majority. We're dealing with 14-year-olds. It's a cross-national study of 27 countries. Canada is not included in the list, but the United States, several European countries, Latin America, Asia, Africa, there's basically 27 countries included in this list. And what they looked at was the political engagement of these 14-year-olds specific chart looks at the engagement of 14-year-olds when you compare that to the number of women that are in the national legislature. So if this test was held in Canada, we would compare the level of 14-year-olds engagement as the proportion of women went up in the House of Commons in Ottawa. And what you can see, for young girls, the more women that are in their national parliament, their national house, in their national government, the more women who are there, the more engaged they become in politics. So when young girls see that women are doing politics, they perk up and they pay attention to politics. They have role models. They pay attention, they look at what these role models are doing, and they think, hey, I can do that. This isn't so hard. Unfortunately, when you look at young boys, when the proportion of women increases in their national legislature, their attention paid to politics decreases. I don't know if it's entirely fair to say that they look at women doing politics and say, oh, I don't want to do that. What I think this actually means is there's something going on in the home that reinforces traditional gender roles that suggest that women ought not to be in public life, that politics is a man's game, and that if women are doing it, then maybe men ought to go and do something else. When we see this in other forms of the labor market, it's called the feminization of labor. When women move in, men move out, and that job is no longer valued as it once was. This is something that is consistent in political science literature, and this study at least points to the idea that this might in fact be happening in politics when women enter into that force as well. So, with this idea that this chart is telling us that maybe socialization, childhood socialization in particular, has something to do with this, we've taken a look at some other surveys to test this idea of socialization. So what we've done is we're shifting from the Canada Election Study, which most of the data has been taken from as well, to something called the Survey of Young Members of Political Parties, or the Youth Members of Political Party Survey. Its principal investigators were Dr. Bill Cross, who's currently at Carleton University, and lucky for me, Dr. Lisa Young, who is my supervisor, which is why I have access to this data. I'm so grateful for her to let me use these numbers. What we're doing is the survey was conducted for members of the Bloc Québécois, the New Democratic Party of Canada, and the Liberal Party of Canada. It was conducted in both official languages. And unfortunately, the Conservative Party is not included, because just as the survey was going out, the Canadian Alliance and the Progressive Conservatives decided that they ought to merge. So we didn't have a Conservative Party really at that point to send the survey to. And unfortunately, I suspect that the young members of the Conservative Party would shed more insight onto what's going on. It would just present a much more holistic picture if we had that party there, but we don't. So we're working with what we have here. So we've got, if you can just move through, we're shifting again from mass politics, so basically general voters, to semi-elite politics. So these are members of political parties. They're active and they've taken that step to actually join a political party. And women are 47% of the sample size. So these are 18 to 25-year-olds, and they're members of political parties. So this chart that we have, generally you can see there's a whole bunch of questions that talk about recruitment, things like if you were asked to join the political party. Earlier political research shows that if women are to be involved in politics, they have to be asked. Men are more likely to volunteer, whereas women not only usually have to be asked, but they have to be asked several times and often dragged kicking and screaming into the political arena. And you can see that with young women, there is a significant, there's almost a 20 percentage point difference between the number of young women who were asked to join the political party and a number of young men. And when you look at some of these other indicators, particularly if parents were politically active, and if they were politically active in a political party, this has a significant effect on young women. It has an effect for young men, but not nearly to the amount as it does for young women. When we look at policy concerns again, these are things that motivate men a little bit more than what they motivate women. But the interesting stuff for the socialization thesis in particular is the effect that parents' activity has on their children. So, what does this mean exactly? We have some preliminary conclusions that we have. And the idea, again, that's recurring and has been recurring in when we're studying women in politics, and it has been recurring for some time, is that politics is still not really a gender equal realm. It's still the realm of men, and women know that, and they might be choosing to disengage from politics as a result. Some of the other ideas that we can, or some of the other conclusions that we can have is that socialization plays a role and that politics does in fact begin in the home. This makes sense. A lot of things begin in the home and it makes sense that politics is just one of those like that. In Canada, there is a relative absence of role models. We currently don't have any federal party leader who is a woman, and I hope somebody would correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm also not really aware of any premiers who are women as well. So when we see the first women's, first ministers conference, even if there are women, there are very few of them. So it's going to be predominantly men. So when we see these big high profile political events, when we see debates, of political party leaders, we are looking at an activity that is appears to be exclusively the purview of men. Now, when we do have a few female role models, they haven't been treated particularly well. And we know that in Canada we have a gendered political media, and I mean, you can say what you want about political women who have been active in politics in Canada and throughout the world, but when you compare specifically the 1993 leaders debate, there was Kim Campbell in particular was treated very, very differently than her main rival, which was Jean Chrétien. At the time, the story coming out of the 1993 leaders debate was that Kim Campbell was a very aggressive woman, and what was she doing being so aggressive? So two scholars decided to say, all right, let's have a look at this. And so they created this scheme where they looked at what might be considered to be aggressive behavior in the debate. So it included finch clenching, pointing the finger, making accusatory statements towards another party leader. And when they actually analyzed the footage of the debate, they found that by a very large amount, Jean Chrétien was the most aggressive leader out of the debate. Kim Campbell had about 40% of the aggressive behavior that he did, and yet the media story was, look at this woman, she's so aggressive, oh my goodness. When you compared Kim Campbell to Audrey McLaughlin, who has been the leader of the New Democrats and played a much more typical woman's role in politics, where she wasn't aggressive, she was conciliatory, she cooperated, she quietly just stated, no, this is what our party is advocating, and it wasn't aggressive, didn't go on the attack, she just didn't get any coverage, period. So it's kind of, you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. If you do play politics the way that men do, you are attacked for it as a woman, and if you don't play politics the way that men do, you are simply ignored. So it was interesting, John Crosby, came to speak at the political science department at the UC, and he was heavily involved and ran for re-election and lost in 1993 as well. And it was interesting when he was asked a question about the 1993 election, he only referred to Kim Campbell as that woman and insinuated that she had lost the election for them, despite the fact that, you know, that election was held on the tail of the most unpopular tax in Canadian history, being the GST, and that the Progressive Conservatives entered the election at the same point that they, at the same level of popular support that they exited it with, and that their decimation was not necessarily due so much to, well, it was due to policy and things like that, but also due to electoral system effects and other such things, not necessarily because that woman had been leading the party. But anyway. There's also a relative lack of discussion of women as a political category. In the 1980s, when the National Action Committee on the Status of Women was still active and funded, they held leadership debates on women's issues every federal election. Since their funding was cut, NAC, which is the umbrella group for women's groups across the country, is essentially bankrupt and not active. And as a result, we really haven't got much discussion, particularly at the national level, of what women's political issues are and how policy is negatively affecting that and what we can do for women as a political category. All of these things point to the fact that it's probably going to be quite difficult to recruit women who would be good in politics, who would be very effective in politics. If you're a woman and you're a leader in your field, either in law or medicine or social work or education, and you are very comfortable in your career in your chosen field, and somebody says, oh, I think you should go into politics, and you take a look at this, the first response universally of almost every single woman is, why? Why would I do this? Some of the further implications of this disengagement and women as a political sphere is that really, if we want to close the representation gaps for young women and for women generally in Canada, we need to close these engagement gaps. So what we really need to do is re-engage women in the political system. We know that there aren't huge voting disparities between men and women in Canada anymore, but we do know that voter turnout is becoming a problem. And theory tells us that if we re-engage people in the political system, they will be more likely to participate, not only at just the voting level, but probably volunteering for campaigns, being willing to write letters to the members of parliament, to other elected officials and the like. Women's ability to mobilize around issues that are important to them is also negatively affected by this disengagement. When you're not paying attention to politics and you're not interested in politics, you don't know when something is coming along that might really negatively affect you. if women were active and mobilized and watching what was going on in the political system, we might have been able to do something about the latest round of EI changes. Students know that if we don't watch the Alberta provincial government like a hawk, they do very bad things to post-secondary education that more often than not are very, very detrimental to students. So we know the importance of watching the political system, and when you've got a disengaged group, they don't watch, and as a result, they don't have a say when things are changed. And also, if this disengagement continues, we've really got a vicious circle. I mean, there's some causal arrows issues here. If you were interested in politics, will you pay attention more so that you'll know more? Or if you know more about politics, are you more inclined to pay more attention and say that you're interested? And I would argue that the arrow goes both ways, which means if you're not interested and you don't know anything about politics, you're just never going to get interested and you're probably never going to know anything about politics unless you get a shove in that direction. So without that, we've just got this vicious circle of disengagement that's going to continue until something changes. So at this point, this is the end of the material that I prepared for today, but I would most definitely welcome and encourage any questions or comments that you have after the lunch break. So thank you.